Hello?
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 You pod.
To win the game. That's the great thing about sports.
You pod to win the game.
All right, welcome into You Pod to Win the Game. I am Charles Robinson here with Jory Epstein. It's been a while. It feels like it's been a minute since you've been on the show.
You know, it's funny. I'm bummed that I missed last week. I was at Eagles practice, and so I wish I would have been there. But if I'm going to get that level of excitement every time I miss a week and come back when you say my name, maybe I'll just keep doing this because the early returns are positive, and y'all crushed the show.
You look like you've been in the sun, though. You look like you've gotten some sun, which is good. That means you've been out of a lot of practices. Where have you been since we last had you on?
Yes, definitely a different shade than when I left for training camp. But since I was last on, since I wasn't on last week, I have been to the Indianapolis Colts, Chicago Bears, Seahawks, Cowboys, Rams, Chargers, and Eagles.
Good Lord. Yeah, that's a trip.
And tomorrow I am off to the Jets-Bucks joint practice. So yes, we have been all over, but found a great courtyard in Southern California to do laundry at.
Yeah, I've done laundry twice on the trip. The last one was the washer and dryer that didn't have a digital timer on it. So I was just supposed to, I don't know, guess, hope it got done when I needed it to be done. Use the force. I have not been. I've only been to Steelers, well, Titans and Steelers. And then today I'm passing through Eagles and Jets later this week. So great. I mean, we have plenty to talk about. A lot of news all of a sudden, especially in the last 48 hours. So first and foremost, Dalvin Cook finally gets done to the Jets. Feels like it's going to be a very earnable contract, although I guess it'll depend on how they want to split carries in that backfield. That's going to be pretty deep now. I was wondering I knew it was money related. I knew it was, he had to make a financial decision here. And I think a lot of it leaned into sort of the incentives and how earnable it really could be. But Dalvin obviously early on indicated this was where he wanted to be. He makes it happen. You look at that backfield now, though, loaded. Breece Hall returning now, coming off of the pup list and back into the mix. So you look at that situation. I mean, how much better does this make the Jets? Because it's almost an addition they didn't necessarily have to make, although it takes some pressure off of the Breece Hall return from injury. But do you think this is a move that makes them exponentially better? Or is it just like, hey, it's another, you know, very talented piece in an offense that already should be pretty damn good?
Right. I mean, it definitely gives them depth at running back, which if you care about your run game and you want to get your defense set up, like that's definitely really good. It is confusing because Breece Hall looked really good last year before he tore his ACL. And I'm wondering, I know I hear a lot with receivers, oh, that first year back from an ACL tear, they're not really themselves. The second year is, I don't know if that's the case with running backs. It's a different craft. You might know having covered the league a little bit longer than I have. But it's kind of like, yes, you don't want to rely on Breece Hall, but did you really need this degree of backup? And I'm also very curious. I was talking to my dad about this last night so we'll get to this part of the news, but Ezekiel Elliott signs with the Patriots. Mm-hmm. A couple hours later, Breece Hall and the Jets is announced. And so you see like Zeke's deal, it was up to $6 million with $3 million base, $1 million signing bonus, and up to 2 guarantees. So really 4 with the chance to get up to 6. And Dalvin Cook, those numbers did not come out. I've not seen them anywhere. If Zeke's really getting 4, but up to 6, is Dalvin Cook really getting 4.1 up to 8.6? Is he getting 6? I mean, how much is this? And again, he's clearly on more of a contender than Zeke is. And obviously, they're not the exact same player, though they were in a similar genre relative to the market right now. But I want to know, how much are the Jets actually shelling out, given that they do have Breece Hall and he was activated off the pup list?
Well, I expect the incentives are going to come in. It's going to be very much, I don't think it's going to lean totally into individual performance. I think part of it is going to be team performance related. That's certainly what the Jets are moving in on here with him. This window for them, they're looking at a 1 to 2 year window where they're basically pushing as much as they can into the pot. And Aaron Rodgers gave back, I mean, the amount of money that he, you know, essentially gave back when he cut a new 2-year deal. This was part of the give back. you know, Aaron Rodgers wanted to make sure that if there were talented pieces available there, they would be able to add them. I think this is only the first. I think, as Rodgers himself said, I think, you know, the trade deadline, depending on what the team looks like and what the needs are, that's another swipe they can take to sort of add to the pot. I guess when you talk about the Breece Hall injury, though, it makes sense to me from the standpoint of, if you can do this and it's what you feel like is affordable and it's something that I think will make Aaron happy, it's best to protect Breece sort of the way that they're kind of trying to protect Zach Wilson by bringing in Aaron Rodgers and giving themselves a little more runway on the development of Zach Wilson. Now they have more runway on the injury return for Breece. So I was texting with somebody with the Panthers when they did joint practices with the Jets. And, you know, this source was just like, man, forget the offense. Like, yeah, everybody's talking about Aaron. Everybody's talking about the offense. All these, they're like, this person was just like, this defense is ridiculous. They're like, the front of this defense, it is monstrous. And like, straight up, and this will get bleeped, he was like, they're going to f*** some teams up. Like, it's that defense for the Jets is really going to wreak havoc up front on a lot of teams. And that, to me, is very intriguing. So much of the attention right now is focused on Rodgers, and, you know, the whole entire first, you know, episode of Hard Knocks was really about Aaron Rodgers. But I think once people really see the Jets hit their groove, they're going to remember, oh, this was a really good defense last year. And there have been great draft additions. There's growth. There's happy players on that side of the ball contractually. It's this is as all in as it gets for the Jets. And in the longer view, if you're a Jets fan, you have to be pretty happy, because there were years where ownership had basically tightened the purse strings on Joe Douglas and they weren't pushing in this kind of money. Now, all of a sudden, you see the Jets are doling out, whether it's Quinnen, whether it's Aaron Rodgers, they're putting their money out there on this one. And I don't know. I just don't see this going badly. I might be completely wrong. Maybe it, you know, it will go sideways. I just feel like this is actually a bet that is going to end up working out, because of the fact that when you talk to another team and they're like, oh my God, the defense, when they sign a player like Dalvin Cook and we're like, geez, the running back depth is really nice. Fundamental things about this team are coming together. But I ask you, is the offensive line going to wreck this entire thing? Because realistically,
yeah,
that is what could happen. Like, if you were like, well, what goes sideways that destroys this? It's an offensive line that cannot essentially protect Aaron Rodgers. And then all of a sudden you create havoc in an offense that would, I think, would struggle if they can't protect.
Right. No, I'm glad you asked that, because as you kind of put this in the reference of relative to the ways the Jets have invested in recent years, this is something different. And again, you kind of want that of like, they're not settling. They're just one move after the next. And I'm here wondering, is this the most talented roster Aaron Rodgers has been a part of? Because like, our editor, Joey Galino, sent us yesterday your preseason predictions. And one of the things we had to put down was MVP. And I was thinking about it. It's not due yet, but I was like, okay, Patrick Mahomes, like, yeah, I will not be surprised if he wins MVP, but that's such an obvious answer. Joe Burrow is like similarly like almost that obvious. There's obviously like the complete wild card, but like Atua, who's like, so such potential for a ceiling, but like my inclination is to put Rodgers, but I'm like, am I just feeding into this hype? Am I the girl who moved to New York this year and was like, oh yeah, Aaron Rodgers is the MVP? But I do feel like if you have a player who, by the way, has won MVP two of the last three seasons, and he's played at such a high level, and now you give him even more talent to work with. But as you mentioned, I don't know. And the thing about the offensive line, and I don't want this to sound like a cop-out, but I fundamentally believe you cannot tell anything meaningful about an offensive line in the preseason and sure, in training camp in particular. And so I just don't have a way to assess it. And I also think it's difficult to really make any grand decisions or understandings of your offensive line in the first 2 to 3 weeks because of how little they do in training camp and because of the rules in preseason. So I do agree with you that that is the place where if it breaks down, one, that's where it'll be. And two, if the offensive line can't hold up, that's a huge issue. But I just feel like we won't be able to even come close to answering that.
Yeah, I mean, it's fair, because people complain, particularly ex-players, you sort of see it on Twitter, that it's really hard for an offensive line to round into form in the preseason, given A, the lack of like game action that a lot of players get. There's the padded practices. There's a pretty big cap on padded practices. And even when teams go padded practices, sometimes it's half pads. So it's not like the entire deal. And the lines do need, especially offensive lines, they need that hitting. They just need that ability to experience not only hitting, but just full speed play to really understand and sort of gel. And we've seen when you go back to when the Chiefs made all those offensive line additions, it took a while before that line really fully came together to its potential. So even when you're sitting there going, well, geez, we feel like we have a stacked group. We feel like we made all the moves we needed to shore it up. It took time ultimately for things to settle in. And you're talking about a Jets offensive line where what are you going to get out of Becton? Like, you know, it's still some of those same questions that those aren't just automatic. Oh, you just need to gel questions. It's like, who's going to show, who's going to be healthy and who's actually going to play up to their potential at this stage. The Rodgers MVP question, I think that's actually kind of interesting because he's back with Hackett, right? Nathaniel Hackett is the guy that was there when he won his last two MVPs. He said that not having Hackett last year made a difference. So, you know, getting Hackett back really should make a difference. I don't know if it's necessarily the most talented group he's played with, but from the youth perspective.
When you include the defense.
When you include the thing about the.
I'm not saying the most talented group that he will be on the field with, but their talented roster top to bottom.
As you said, when we got kind of asked for the awards, I thought to myself, well, like Rodgers could meaningfully be in the MVP race.
Yeah.
Quinnen Williams could meaningfully be in the defensive player of the year race. Will McDonald could be in the rookie defensive player of the year race. Sauce Gardner is, I mean, based on last year, unless there's a recession, an all-pro caliber cornerback. Yeah, I mean, across the board, it's a really, really good team. You know, I think we can't forget the year they won the Super Bowl. You know, Charles Woodson was defensive player of the year and probably one of the most dynamic. I mean, he was clearly the most dynamic defensive player in the NFL that year. Rodgers was playing at, you know, an absolutely sick level. I would say there's a lot of talent there, you know, and if they put it all together and they win a Super Bowl, then we'll look back and we can probably make a really good comparison. Jets are not taking their foot off the gas pedal. That makes them a very intriguing team. It almost grows on a daily basis. So I'll be interested to see what Breece Hall looks like, though, when he gets back to practice today. Zach Martin, reworked contract. So looked nasty, looked dicey. Jerry was saying all the things that kind of made you think, like, geez, maybe this isn't going to get done. You and I talked about this before.
Okay, before you say anything more, let me just read you something, and I'm going to make you guess the day that it was written, okay? When you tap league and agency sources on a resolution, the most sensible compromise from the outside is this: a Donald-esque deal that is adjusted for age realities, which would guarantee Martin somewhere in the realm of $34 million to $36 million over the next two seasons, with either a hard out to free agency in 2025 or some kind of one-year balloon payment by Dallas if the team wants to retain him an additional year. So $34 to $36 million, which for those keeping track at home, $18 million, 2 years, $36 million. So that deal got done on August 14th. Guess when what I just read you was written.
July 27th. I looked.
July 27th. Because C-Rob wrote it, because you guys are listening to a podcast where C-Rob is just out here predicting things weeks in advance that happen to a T. He said 34 to 36. The man got 36. And I got to say, the Cowboys front office had me convinced when I was down there that, like, they might not budge on it, which I didn't agree with, but they were... There were some harsh words said off the record when I had these conversations.
Oh, so. I was with you when I wrote that. And again, that's not my info. That's when you reach out to people who do these deals, when you reach out to the teams and come to an understanding what the landscape looks like for veteran players of this level. Remember, Zach Martin, I mean, he's an all-world player at his position. And the comps I was getting from teams and then agents who do these deals – it was, okay, well, when you look out there now, what's comparable to a Zach Martin? Well, it's really an Aaron Donald. That's how good Zach Martin is at his position. He clearly still has a lot left in the tank here. How can we get him maybe not to the point where he's exceeding the salaries of guards who are, you know, 5, 6, 7 years younger than him and doing their first massive deal and just hitting their wheelhouse. It's the compromise was going to fall toward getting him pretty close, but really about that guaranteed money, being able to say to Zach, this is 2 years of real money we're going to be giving you here. And when I asked, what are the bumpers? That's where I got the 34 to 36 million over the 2 years. But I was with you after I wrote that. I departed Cowboys camp, but then I was like listening to the rhetoric that was kind of coming out of the front office and Jerry. And I'm like, I don't know, man, this seems a lot nastier than I kind of expected. And this is a really good player that's they love, that they're really close to, that Jerry speaks so highly of. And yet they were really, it felt like they were drawing a pretty hard line in the sand. And by the way, they do what I think is the right thing for a player who is an anchor. He's so important in that organization from a leadership standpoint, from a play standpoint. And again, you didn't reset the market here. You did a deal that I think was very fair and equitable, and it's a good compromise. The Cowboys kicked in some more money. Zach Martin didn't say I need to be the highest paid player at my position the last couple of years that I might be here. The effect, though, that you think it'll have on the Cowboys moving forward, having this guy back in the fold.
Yeah, I think from a negotiating standpoint, what was really key here is, like you said, not resetting the market, because the Cowboys don't want to create this situation where Micah Parsons is like, hey, well, I'm not the highest paid anymore, and look how many sacks I just put up in Defensive Player of the Year, or CeeDee Lamb comes out, puts up an insane year. Well, I'm not the highest paid anymore. And so I actually think it helps them that the win was that he's the third highest paid guard, not the first. And then for Zach, he got more money. It's still, there's not going to be a lot of players who have a claim similar to his, but there will be some. And so that was really, really important. In terms of what it means for the offense, I think it's massive because, first of all, you can't just play around with week one and week two games. The Cowboys are opening their season against the Giants and Jets. And if they don't have guys to stop a Dexter Lawrence, Will McDonald, Quinnen Williams, that is going to be really, really costly. And you also need this Cowboys offense to develop a level of confidence in Mike McCarthy's first year calling plays. One of the biggest things that Mike McCarthy has been saying going back to the spring in terms of what will change in the offense is the nature of the protections. And I even asked Mike McCarthy when I went to camp, I'm like, I know that Zach is physically capable of playing without a preseason. There's only so much you could do preseason for an offensive line, as we've mentioned on this episode. But given that you have changed the protections, does it make you any more concerned about Zach missing time? And of course, they gave the company line, no, like Zach's fine. We're not worried about him. But it matters because also offensive line is the position. I mean, I guess quarterback is up there, but it is the position I would say you're most dependent on how you work with others. And so like they need five guys playing as one. So if Zach Martin's doing great, but Terrence Steele or Tyler Biadasz on his right or left side is not on the same page as him because they've been working something at camp that's different than what Zach worked the prior years, that matters. And that matters. And it only takes a couple times that Dak Prescott's pocket gets blown up for it to really wreck a game. So I do think that this is pretty huge for what the Cowboys need to develop in terms of the offense. I don't think it's shocking that it got done. I also, we'll never know. I wasn't so convinced that Zach was going to miss games over this. So I do think that it matters. But at some point, there are certain situations like this. Like, why are you waiting till week one to figure it out? They did that with Zeke. It was a totally different situation when he had his holdout. But, like, just get this done. Move forward. Have Zach in the fold and start preparing like you're going to be playing for something this year.
Yeah, and as you said, I mean, there's an element of chemistry of being in there. And I think this is right now, this is where you're going to want to see the veterans dial in for teams. You know, there's going to be, especially the next preseason game, is really where you're going to kind of stick your – you know, flag in the ground and say, this is where we want to see kind of a realistic snapshot of how our first team units are going to work together. And yeah, it's a different situation with a running back. You know, you're not necessarily working in unison with certain guys on combo blocks or this or that, or reading, you know, certain protections. Most of the time, Zeke, you're going to give him the ball and just find the hole make the cut, you know, accelerate, pick up yardage.
And I feel like it might sound like the two things I just said were paradoxical, that being you can't tell anything about an offensive line in the preseason and it matters if Zach Martin is there. But I don't think that is, because I think that you can't tell how the group is actually going to function until in the season. But I do think what they do in the preseason impacts how they will.
Yeah, and I do think, but I also think it's you can read to how one player is functioning inside the camp, and maybe even how they're functioning next to the player there. You know, the entire unit's a little more difficult to read on any given play, because you're talking about five players. One person does the wrong thing and it destroys the other five. But you can say, okay, how to, you know, what's his footwork look like? You know, how's he working? Okay, with the defense through this wrinkle in practice, how did the two handle it together? Yeah, it's the overall unit's a little more complicated than simply plugging someone in on the right side and going, okay, well, how does the right side look? How are they at least working together right now? Zeke, though, out of the fold permanently, or at least for now, with the Dallas Cowboys, signs with the New England Patriots. I thought the deal, I was surprised. I'll be completely honest with you. I thought I thought he would come in at sort of like a $2 million base and then some incentives, maybe $3 million if he pushed it. As you said, we're talking about like a $3 million base, a $1 million signing bonus. It's like $4 million in real money here. And then some incentives on top of it. For what I thought the market was, and then for what maybe Dallas would have paid to bring him back in, which I think would have been less than this deal, I actually thought it was pretty good money. New England does not surprise me because of how they've used backs. It makes sense to put him in there. Ramondre Stevenson, I guess you could kind of compare the skill set of the two players. They're both pretty tough runners. But the usage for the Patriots are, especially with running backs, they're very much about health and availability. They're very much about platooning situationally in the backfield. And so I'm never surprised when they're adding depth in the backfield. Again, though, the money, I guess I'm just surprised. I thought Zeke would, honestly, this late in the game, a little cheaper asset than that, but good for him, for being able to carve out, what could ultimately be a $6 million deal, still a 1 year window. I would guess he's likely going to be a year to year contract guy at this point, but the fit for New England, I think, does it make sense to you?
Yeah, I was reading an article in The Athletic today where it was saying that Stevenson ranked 7th in percentage of his rushes that went for 12 yards or more last year, but ranked 28th in third down conversions and 25th in the percentage of his runs that went for 0 or negative yards. And I feel like it's almost, when I read that, not having watched a lot of Patriots games last year, I'm like, okay, that makes a lot of sense, because he's averaging 5 yards a carry. He's getting some of those big plays off. That's not really Zeke's strength at the moment, or it wasn't last season. But third down, short yardage, red zone, Zeke was great there, and he had 12 touchdowns last year. And so I do think it can be a complement of skill set. I also think when you think of just Bill Belichick, he obviously loves defense, and a good run game is very good for defense. So I think it makes sense. And I think I wonder with Dalvin Cook and Zeke, like, did one of them get the deal done and then the other was like, okay, then I'll just take the other available? How much of this was money? How much of this was fit? Like, Zeke, we don't know how much money he got in terms of like guarantees relative to Dalvin Cook, but he's not with a contender in the same way that Cook is. And so I think that for Zeke, he's going to get an opportunity. And I do think that there will be a way that he could be used, even if it's fewer carries and fewer snaps on the field, that he can have a significant contribution to this team.
I'd be shocked if this is any kind of like a heavy load situation, right? I mean, it doesn't, that doesn't make a lot of sense to me that given how the Patriots ultimately use it, this to me, the fit makes sense in terms of what the load should ultimately be. That surprised me about Stevenson. I actually did not know that his efficiency was actually leaning more toward my eyes. When I watch him play, I see, you know, what seems to me to be historically a tougher runner. I thought he would have been better on short short yardage situations. So the compliment actually makes better sense than even what I initially thought. Jonathan Taylor, want to swing it to Taylor, obviously returns to camp. You were with the Colts, comes back, remains on the PUP list. I don't know. This feels like a situation where it's, you look at it and he's going to be there. He's got to be there. He's not going to miss money over this, I don't think, you know, and it just doesn't feel resolved in any way, shape, or form. There's no indication that he's relenting on this idea that he wants to be traded. There's no indication to me that he's suddenly happy. And there's no indication to me that this doesn't continue to be basically kind of a hold in with him there and really not contributing ultimately in practice. But being back in the building, I guess, is the step forward that they would hope for. They named Anthony Richardson the starting quarterback there. Zero question whether or not they need him in that backfield. I just don't know how this gets resolved without some kind of either a trade or something that changes financially, or you're going to end up with a guy who I think is probably going to end up playing this season unhappy and looking for a resolution as soon as the year's over.
Yeah, I think that it makes sense from Taylor's standpoint to switch a holdout to a hold-in, because to lose $50,000 a day, if you're Zach Martin, you've already made big money on your contracts. You just ended up getting an $8 million raise over the next 2 years for that. Like, you can afford that in a different way than Jonathan Taylor, who is still on his rookie contract at a time when his position is not valued across the league. I don't think him coming back means that they are closer, but I agree with you that it can be the next step to get to where they are closer, because sometimes you just need to, like, have Jim Irsay walk down the hallway, run into you and be like, let's work this out. I'll stop tweeting. You'll play. It'll be great. Do you expect him to not play week 1, week 2 if he doesn't have a resolution?
No, I think he'll play. Like, I would be surprised if it got to the point where he's removing himself from the field, because I think at some point, again, the threat there from the team when it comes to that NFI list, that doesn't just go away. I mean, they can still say, right, okay, well, if you're injured and you're not, you know, in the fold here, we're still going to sit there and stare at the NFI list and we just won't pay you. I don't think that's changing. And the thing is, you know, I know people look at the running back situation and they think, well, it's accrued hits and it's not necessarily age. I don't know if I agree with that. I think it's at the end of the day, if let's say he sat out this season, right? Would that make him more attractive, less attractive to teams? I think it's a wash. I don't think a team goes, well, geez, he didn't play in 2023, so he's a more attractive asset. To me, if he were to do that, what you're gearing yourself toward is you're absolutely pushing for that trade at the deadline, right? You're saying, okay, I'm not going to show up. I'm not going to play games. You're going to have to figure out what you want to do with me now, because I'm going to be here. Is it going to be like a Deshaun Watson situation where they're like, all right, don't be disruptive. We're going to carry you to the deadline. And then maybe we feel like we can get something out of you. Would they be able to get more out of him at the deadline if they were to carry him in a no play but future trade situation? I don't think so. You can't compare a running back really to a quarterback. Whatever the trade market might be for him at this point, and I haven't heard anything solid, is the same now as I think ultimately what it would be at the trade deadline, unless you're in a situation where a contender that's just ripped it off in November, playing great, suddenly loses a centerpiece running back, or says we're willing to give up the house to ultimately get this guy on our team. It would basically be a situation sort of similar to the 49ers with McCaffrey. You'd have to look at it and go, this is our all-in push. This is the player we're going to get. All possible scenarios feels to me doubtful. I still think this is a player who's on the field for them in some way, shape, or form this year, and we'll be looking for a resolution after the season is ultimately over. A resolution, by the way, that does not include him basically being held hostage into next season like we see with other running backs. So answer your own question. I mean, do you think he's realistically going to sit out and just say, you know what, I'm not going to play any games?
I don't think so. I think he shouldn't, in terms of what's best for his future. And I'm not saying the Colts' future. Clearly, it's best for the Colts' future to have him out there. But here's what I'd say. Browns running back Nick Chubb made a very fair point at the beginning of training camp after that whole running back Zoom call, where he said, we're the only position who gets punished as much or viewed negatively as much for our production. Like, the more you run, the more that's held against you, because that's tread on your tires, you're worn down. And I do agree with that. I've had some GMs tell me they don't agree with that. I do think that even proportionally, running backs are viewed a little bit unfairly if you want to talk about just what would be great theoretically fair. That said, I think it will hurt him even more in a time where you still have guys playing on the franchise tag next year. You could have Saquon Barkley, Tony Pollard, and Josh Jacobs on the market next year. You're not going to have the supply-demand balance that you want if you sit out this year. And so you're just going to look like a guy who came off a down season to a degree in 2022. Yes, there were injuries. And now you show nothing in 2023. And by the way, there are guys who are going to be starring this year in 2024 and also guys you can get in the draft, which I had one GM make a really interesting point to me this past couple weeks where he was saying, yes, you're not getting those same kind of free agency contracts, but look at the top two running backs, how high they were drafted this year in Bijan Robinson and Jahmyr Gibbs. And so I think that there is this belief among some front offices that it's not that running backs are devalued, it's that you can get those guys in college who are going to be sufficient to replace them. And I think also if you're Jonathan Taylor, yeah, if you were coming off your 2021 season where you led the league with 1,811 yards, 18 touchdowns, 106.5 yards per game, all of those were league-leading stats, maybe you could do a little bit to sort of withstand what the market value or what the market trends are saying. But coming off his 2022 year, I don't think he can afford to do that. And I don't think that's how teams are going to view it. So whether he will be on the field, we will see. Whether he should, if he wants to maximize his value, I think so. And I will feel that way even if he ends up getting hurt in week four. I hope he doesn't, obviously. I hope no one gets hurt ever. But I think that he just needs to be able to show more and to show that, hey, in this new offense with Shane Steichen, we've seen what the Eagles running game did last year with Jalen Hurts, sort of a mobile quarterback and a running back, and what that did for Miles Sanders. We need to be able to see that Jonathan Taylor could do that again for him to get his best value on the market.
Well, and there's an element too. We don't know. Let's see how the situation with Richardson unfolds. Let's say Taylor decides, all right, I'm gonna play this out. Let's see where this goes. What if he's recognized as an extremely important asset for Anthony Richardson? What if the team sits there and looks at him and say Richardson, you know, hits a groove and maybe even looks at ownership and says, yeah, you know, this is my guy. Like I got this is a balancing force for me in the backfield. Who knows how dynamic that offense can be from a running standpoint with both Richardson and Taylor in that backfield. Maybe there's a little bit of a revelation to you once you see that tandem perform together, because remember, that's the unknown, right? We know what Taylor is. We've seen Taylor function. We know what he can bring to the table. We know he's a top end running back. What we don't know is how does he work with now your presumed centerpiece for the next 10, 15 years? That's what you want Richardson to be. If you watch Taylor go out on the field and you look and you go, actually, he is now a monumental piece that has really affected the ability for Richardson to not only grow, but to maximize his talent out of the gate.
Right.
You're going to think about that differently when it comes to ultimately whether or not you want to pay, because as we said before, it's about maximizing the quarterback. I'm not saying running backs can't be quarterback maximizers. You just have to prove it. You have to show it in a tangible way that convinces the front office and ownership that, okay, well, it doesn't have to be a top tier wide receiver. It doesn't have to be a left tackle. It can actually be this player in the backfield. Let's be honest about Derrick Henry. You're going to tell me that when Ryan Tannehill was playing really well, Derrick Henry had nothing to do with that, when the whole offense was basically streamlined through Derrick Henry? No, absolutely. He was a quarterback maximizer. And by the way, he maximized the guy who didn't have the highest possible ceiling. Taylor goes in there and helps to maximize the guy who does have a really high ceiling. Maybe ownership goes, okay, this is a pay situation. Like we don't, McCaffrey did get paid, right? And I don't think people are even looking at McCaffrey and saying, well, he's not worth that money, especially in San Francisco. When I went through there, they're like, man, look at him. He's healthy. Yeah, you see him in practice. Right. He is worth it. You can be worth it. It's just, how do you prove it? How do you prove it to people in the building? You're not going to do that by not playing football. And there's going to be arguments in both directions. But I'm with you. I think his best foot forward is ultimately going to be putting his foot on the field.
Yeah, it's funny you say that, because at first when you started to talk about showing them what he's worth, I actually thought you meant if he sits out and the Colts can't do anything, they would realize how valuable he is and how much he was sort of what is it, the straw that stirs the drink even more than they realize. But you make a really good point. This is a new coach. This is a new coordinator. This is a new quarterback. And so it's not like you're going to be able to have all of those controls on that experiment to say, hey, here's the Jonathan Taylor variable and it didn't work. On the contrary, if he can show that he can be a great pairing for Anthony Richardson and Jim Irsay gets excited about that, that can do something. Now, do you think it's more likely that they view him as that quarterback multiplier that you're mentioning? Or that they're like, oh, Anthony was able to do this all along. We don't need this guy. We can get another one.
You know, there's no question in my mind that Irsay thinks he knows what Taylor is because he has the institutional memory of watching Taylor and seeing, you know, he just knows that he's got a couple of years to lean back on. As you said, new staff, all these other individuals don't have that direct institutional memory of being there watching it. The GM does. Okay, obviously. Ownership and the general manager. I'm talking about the coaching staff. I think the coaching staff, I would lean into the coaching staff making an honest assessment about that. So say Richardson takes the field, Taylor's out there with him. And let's put it sort of in the best case scenario aspect. Say Richardson has like a Cam Newton-esque start, right? Really just lights it up coming out of the gate. As unlikely as that may be, I'm saying that ceiling, I would bet the coaching staff is going to turn to Jim Irsay and say,
we need this guy.
Yeah. Like, look, Taylor's a big piece of this. He's a huge component. We know he's a net positive. And maybe at the very least, when the season concludes, it comes down to, do we want to f- with this? Like, do we want, we're off to a great start. This is awesome. This works. And he is a net positive. How much are we talking about saving by now changing the dynamic of this situation? If keeping him only costs us, you know, let's say in Irsay's mind, he's saying, well, this is a $10 million a year back, right? If keeping him costs us an extra $3 million a year, is it worth screwing with what we have going on with Richardson right now for $3 million a year? Sometimes you get into the economics of it and you'll have decision makers stare at the situation and go, it is, the risk is not worth $3 million. We'll figure out $3 million a year. We'll find that somewhere else, yeah, you know, on the roster. You know, let's keep this tandem ultimately together. So
it's also interesting because I've talked to GMs who are like, hey, if you're in the NFC right now, like you might view your future for the next few years a little bit differently just because of how loaded the AFC is, particularly at quarterback right now. And I think there's a version of that argument that extends to division where if you are the Colts in the AFC South and you can kind of be like, hey, the Texans need a little bit of time. The Titans might be switching to Will Levis in a year or two. Yeah, the Jaguars have Trevor Lawrence, but still, like, they're not a fully proven, consistently good commodity yet. Like, you might see hope where you don't have to wait 3 to 5 years because you're competing against just a really stacked division. So I think that you make a good point that waiting a year or two to really get that running back that Anthony Richardson needs might not only impact his career significantly, but also impact the Colts window.
Also not the worst thing to look outward into the division and go, especially if Taylor is healthy and playing at the top end. I think we'd all agree if he's not RB1 in the league, he's pretty close, right? RB2, RB3 right there. It's nice to look in the division and go, hey, we feel great about our quarterback. And we also have what all these other teams don't have, a running back who's RB1, RB2, RB3. None of those other teams have that. Now they, you know, are there Damian Pierce? Okay, good, nice young runner. Obviously dealt with some injuries early on. Travis Etienne, again, pretty dynamic player. Not in that same category, right? It's nice to go, we have a cog, we have an ability to bring a player to the table that our opposition doesn't. And you just don't get rid of that so easily. So we'll see how this plays out. I'm sure it'll drag on. I don't expect this to be anything that all of a sudden resolves itself soon. And if it does, I'm going to take credit for it because I brought it up on the show. Let's go to the ad break and we'll get back to Jory on the other side. We'll talk about the training camps we've gone through and maybe some of the things that impressed us. All right, welcome back in. You and I have been through training camps, multiple. You've been through a multitude since the last show. We're not going to hit them all, obviously, but I want you to talk about the Cowboys a little bit. I went through early on. really can't see Jack, you know, there's no pads on. Like, it's just, it's hard to really tell what you're looking at and the real chemistry. You went in at a much later date, had a feel for what they look in pad, what they look like in pads. The wide receivers in particular caught your eye. I'm curious what you think of the group. When I went through, I will say this, the speed of Cooks was evident right away when I watched, and it felt like a cog immediately that I was like, oh yeah, this feels like this is going to work. But I was also really impressed by Michael Gallup. I was like, man, you know, he just looks more live than he did a year ago. He looks more, he just, for lack of a better term, he looked to me to be healthy when I watched him, and reminding me more of the Michael Gallup I saw coming into the league and the guy that they ultimately wanted to extend prior to all the injury issues.
Yeah, I would say I agree with those assumptions. I would say, first of all, Dak told me that Brandon Cooks is the best veteran pickup they've had in his time with the team. And I was really? And some of the receivers were agreeing with that. And the idea was that, first of all, he was a piece that they need on that offense. Like you said, he's got the speed. He can still play a lot. Yes, he's been traded around, but like, he's a guy who's like routinely getting 1,100 yards a season. But he's also someone who has just really taken these receivers under his wing. And that sounds cliche, but Jalen Tolbert was their third round draft pick 2 years ago now. And he just, like, it was a big jump to go from South Alabama to the Dallas Cowboys in 1 year. And it wasn't one that he was able to make in a way that, like, coaches and players felt confident in. And he was spending this offseason out in Oregon with Brandon Cooks, like, really getting caught up to speed on sort of, like, playbook, routes, being a pro, all of that. And Brandon Cooks is, like, elevating guys in a way that he doesn't have to do. Like, he's still contributing on the field. They're not bringing him in a player-coach role, and he is doing that. Completely agree with Gallup. I think for Gallup, yes, there was a physical health aspect last year, but there's also just a huge confidence element of, like, Michael Gallup's didn't have the confidence yet that his ACL was what it needed to be, which is understandable because it does often take 2 years. And so that led to him not believing himself in the same way, which led to Dak not believing him in him necessarily the same way. And it impacted just a lot of the opportunities in his role in the offense. And I think that that is not going to be an issue this year. And both of them just really have that confidence in each other back. And to bench him, both of those, before you even get to CeeDee Lamb, who is still their number one wide receiver and who is going to, I think, take that next step. Like, they've got a loaded group. They'll need it because they have a lot of questions at the running game. Even though you have Tony Pollard, he is coming back from a broken leg. Deuce Vaughn was super exciting in the first week of the preseason. And I think at least showed that he deserves an opportunity in the regular season, but you still have to see how that goes. But what was actually most interesting to me from the Cowboys is I talked to Dak, McCarthy, their offensive coordinator, Brian Schottenheimer, and all these receivers about sort of the way they're training the receivers differently this year. And that is that Kellen Moore, and there's not one right way to do it. After the story published, there are some people being like, how do the Cowboys not do this? But essentially, there was more freedom, creativity, option routes in what the receivers had been doing under Kellen Moore. And under Mike McCarthy, in a more West Coast system type offense, they're saying, like, no, we really need to time our receivers' routes with Dak Prescott's footwork and his dropbacks. And so the receivers were telling me that for the first time that they've been here, Gallup said this, and again, he's been there since 2018, when they are learning their routes in meetings, it has up on the screen, like, here's how many steps Dak will be taking on his throw in conjunction with this route. And that is something that is just different. And again, I think people misconstrued it when they're like, this is a knock on Kellen Moore. Of course, this also comes out like the day I'm visiting the Chargers and talking to Kellen Moore. But you can have different ways to teach receivers. Like, yes, Dak knew how many steps he needed to take, but the receivers did not previously know. And while you could worry that that will slow them down, the really big thing there is that when you have the interceptions that they had, and Dak led the league in interceptions last year despite missing 5 regular season games, it's because a lot of times they weren't on the same page and they were reading the defenses differently on option routes. And so if you now know, like, hey, that's great that it's a little more of an open window if I stop 3 yards short of my 12-yard route, but Dak doesn't think I'm going to be there, and he can't wait for me to get there to release the ball, I do think that that can change something. So it'll be interesting to see how that translates, but I think that while that's not a new concept in the NFL, and I understand why some offenses have gone to more creative and free-flowing styles, I do think that given the interception trend that they had last year, this is what this offense needs at this time.
I think it can help wide receivers be a little more intuitive too. When you think about, you know, the number of steps ultimately a quarterback has to take, when they come off the line of scrimmage, especially if you do it enough, it becomes, I don't want to say rote, but you kind of know, like, hey, this, he's going to be getting it out fast. Like, I know this is, it's not just, okay, here's what my route is, thinking of site adjustments or whatever. You know, he's, you know, this is a 4-step drop. This is a 7-step drop. Like, you know, there's going to be a difference in terms of the speed where it's coming out. You know that that ball is likely going to be in the air before you've turned your head. You're heading to a spot. Thinking of it more three-dimensionally from a wide receiver standpoint allows them, as they become more experienced in the season, you know, to be more intuitive at the line of scrimmage and just know coming off, like, okay, this is fast. This one's going to be a fast one. There's not going to be a lot of time for development here. I know that by the time I turn my head, my hands better be where they need to be because the ball's probably going to be on me.
Yeah, I'll read you this quote from CD because I think it explained that really well, where he said, he told me that, quote, I can run my routes more comfortably knowing that he's done with his drop or that he's not getting touched or that he's protected. I feel like the speed that we have in this room, the guys that can track the ball, the mentality will help us get open, create separation. It just can't be too early because then it's quickening up his steps and it's a whole different situation. Yeah. Being on the same timing as the quarterback is very important for us.
Yeah, I mean, rhythm is everybody. You watch games and you know when the offense looks completely out of rhythm. And often a lot of that has to do with how quickly maybe the quarterback is moving versus the parts around him and what they're anticipating. So it'll be interesting to see how CD really opens up the offense. I went through Steelers. Interesting thing about the Steelers, everybody knows about George Pickens, right? We're watching George Pickens. It's like there's an all-world catch, it seems like, every week where there's some ridiculous thing that George Pickens does, right? And there were reasons why George Pickens was not a potentially, you know, top 10 pick ultimately in the draft, because there had ultimately been issues with him in the past and there were red flags and teams were a little scared of drafting him. And then he comes in, you see from a talent standpoint, you're like, wow, yeah, okay, well, that's why, you know, some teams didn't even want to put him on the sub board. They wanted to keep him on the board and maybe just push him down a little bit. But the talent there is so exquisite. From when I was there, I can tell you that for Kenny Pickett, it feels like he's taken a step forward, but it also feels like the connection he has with these wide receivers. I don't know that you're going to see an explosion in Kenny Pickett's production, but him being there, getting real reps. One of the things that he said when I passed through, he was like, I wasn't getting really any meaningful reps at this point. You know, he said, when I came through last year at this point, I did not feel like I was meaningfully inside that offense functioning in a way with first team players, which he wasn't, and growing on the path that he is now. Now he's like, hey, the entire offseason, every rep I'm getting is meaningful. All the chemistry I'm building is meaningful. Pickens, his mentality, his energy, I think his commitment to growing with Kenny is top shelf at this stage, which they're super happy about. But Allen Robinson comes in. I think it was interesting in that he enters into a wide receiver room where I think they needed a veteran. Like, I think they needed a veteran who had been through some different scenarios and other teams. I don't want to say an adult in the room, okay, but kind of an adult in the room. Like, somebody who can come in and be a little bit of a grounding force for a guy like Pickens, whose confidence is sky high, but you also want to inject a little bit of humility into the situation with the whole room. Like, okay, great, this is awesome. We're making these strides, but let's not get ahead of ourselves. There's a lot of work and commitment. You're not just showing up on Sunday, you're showing up on Wednesday, you're showing up on Thursday. Like, here's all these other days that are also important. So Robinson, I think his addition in there has been a good thing. I don't know. Again, I'm going to be very careful here, because when I went through the Rams and Allen Robinson was there, the thought process was he's going to explode and be this great player. And then it just ultimately didn't happen. And, you know, there's a variety of reasons why maybe that ultimately didn't work out. I still think he is a really valuable cog. I think he will add to this offense. They're very excited, though, about ultimately where he and Kenny are going. The Steelers just functionally, it just feels like a such a professional organization when you come through, especially when you go through other places and things feel a little slapdash in certain areas of either player development or how a squad is ultimately being coached. It does not feel that way with the Steelers, but it's funny, when I went through, I reflected kind of on the AFC North and I thought, God, someone in this division's got to get the short end of the stick, because all four of these franchises feel great right now. When you talk about Baltimore, you talk about Cleveland, you talk about Cincinnati, even with the Burrow injury, you feel like you ducked a huge, you know, issue there. It wasn't the catastrophic thing that ultimately it could have been. Those should all be teams that should feel good about where they're trending right now. And then you have Pittsburgh, where it's like they still, I think, are kind of being left out of the mix. But when I look at, you know, Joey Porter Jr., you look at the offensive line additions that get made in the offseason, the draft, obviously, as well. It just feels like a under the radar, continuing to build, very solid team that, you know, if Kenny Pickett takes a step forward, I think he's going to take that step forward this year and surprise some people. It's a hellish division. It really is. Like someone is going to end up being the fourth place team, and it's hard to figure out exactly who that is right now. I don't know that it's the Steelers when I pass through. It just feels like a team that's going to continue to be a very, very tough team defensively, especially up front. And quarterback growth can mean a lot. Offensive line, I think they have been much worse, in a much worse situation from an offensive line standpoint. But like I said, just feels like a pro organization ultimately when I go through and maybe don't sleep on Kenny Pickett this year, not taking that big step forward in year two.
Right. And again, the Mike Tomlin effect is so real. It is funny, when C-Mac and I were doing our power rankings earlier this summer, I just had no idea what to do with that division, because I could see it going a gazillion ways and none of it would surprise me. And I wrote about this a little bit when I was at the Browns to start my training camp tour, which is, Jimmy Haslam wasn't saying like, oh, we need to make the playoffs or we need to win the division to like consider this year a success. And obviously he would want both of those things, but I kind of understood where he was coming from in the sense of, not all roads to division titles are created equally. And I think the AFC North is one of the harder ones. And there are also just four teams who not only all have a lot of potential, but they're differently talented. And that makes it really hard to understand how they match up, where you're like, oh, Browns will take Deshaun Watson time. Well, he's still got a high end of talent, and you still have like a Myles Garrett type on that, on the other side of the field. And then, okay, well, the Steelers always have these guys. You still got Lamar, and oh, they're giving him receivers for their first time. The Bengals should be the favorites. I mean, you could convince yourself, I actually think, into any of the four of them being the favorites in the division. And I don't feel that way about every division.
All right. Well, look, I'm out at Philly today. I'm curious what your reflections were, having gone through Eagles camp at this point.
Yeah, I think A.J. Brown is better, and I think Jalen Hurts is better. Those were the two stories I kind of wrote. I would say with A.J. Brown, I really focused on, Nick Sirianni had said that he thought that A.J. was getting quicker this camp, and I sat down with Nick over lunch one day, and I was like, explain to me quickness versus fastness, like versus speed. Like, I understand people think of quick and fast as different in the NFL, but how do you define it? And he was really taking me through, like, he feels like A.J. Brown is getting in and out of his breaks quicker, getting off the line of scrimmage quicker, that change of direction, that ability to jab in a different direction. And that's something that A.J. Brown really worked on this offseason. I talked to his trainer he was working with, and he kind of upped his speed days from twice a week to three times a week. And one of the lines that the trainer said that I thought was so well put is, it's not only about how fast you can go, it's also about how fast you can stop. And you need that accelerate and the deceleration. You need to be able to get into the break, make that move. And so that's really where A.J. Brown is picking up. And I think when you add that combination of, physically, he was clocking better mileage, about 1.6 miles per hour faster than he was a year ago. You add in, it's his second year in the playbook, so he's not trying to figure things out. And it's his second year with Jalen Hurts at quarterback. I think that combination is pretty crazy. And while, even though he had his best career year in terms of yardage, he had the most receiving yards or most yards from scrimmage of any skill player on the team last year. And he tied his career best mark and the team high mark for touchdowns among skill players last year. He only caught about 60% of passes from Jalen Hurts last year. And I totally agree that, look, you look at the depth of his targets, they're longer passes and riskier passes than his teammates. He's getting a lot more opportunities, so they're not going to all work. But I do think that there is actually a pretty significant room for growth there. I'm not saying it's like 80% of passes, but even going from 60 to 65 or to 67% of targets, that can be a really meaningful difference. And then I think you add the fact that he and Jalen Hurts are getting a lot more freedom at the line of scrimmage. They sort of have this like nonverbal communication they were taking me through where they do have that ability to change plays when they see something and they kind of understand what each other's thinking. And I think the last thing I'll say is that Jalen Hurts as a better quarterback this year doesn't mean Jalen Hurts making five times as many spectacular plays or throwing the deep ball more often. I think a lot of his growth will be judged in his career based off what he can do with his arm, because that's how it is for mobile quarterbacks. And obviously there are some racial tinges of how that is specifically for Black mobile quarterbacks. But the Eagles want Jalen Hurts to get completions, and Jalen Hurts in the quarterback room is really, really focusing on that of like, look, if you complete the ball all the time, like good things will happen when you look at the average yardage of a completion rate. And so I think that we shouldn't just say like, is what Jalen doing best for highlights? Is it what Jalen doing best for the offense, best for what's winning? And if so, he could be a markedly better quarterback and understanding the defenses and reading the defenses better, but his reads might now tell him like, you don't need to take the big shot every play. So yes, I understand the Super Bowl hangover history and all of that. And I'm not saying like, oh, guaranteed Super Bowl chance this year, but I do think that they should absolutely be the favorites in the NFC. And they absolutely still have a collection of talent, the coaching and the stability to take that all of that to the next level.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny when you talk about Hurts, there is an element of efficiency inside the offense that I'm glad you brought that up, because it was actually Jonathan Gannon when I was talking to Gannon, who obviously comes out of the Eagles system.
Right.
And I was in Cardinals camp. He was talking about like quarterbacking and being a defensive coordinator and who you hate to face as a quarterback. And one of the things that he said, he was talking about just sort of like the efficiency that quarterbacks bring into an offense. If they're super efficient, they know what they're doing.
Right.
At one point he was like, that's Tom Brady to a T. It's like, if you broke down and had to face Tom Brady all these years, you're watching a guy who walks up to the line of scrimmage, knows what he's doing in every single scenario. He's like, I see this, this, and this. That means I can do this, this, and this. He's like, and he's done all this before the ball's even snapped. He's like, if you get a quarterback to that point where he's so efficient that he walks up knowing he's the maestro, knowing he sees everything, knowing he sees the disguise, and not thinking, hey, I got to throw a 50-yard pass here. It's just, hey, no, I need to do the right thing for exactly what I'm seeing. And then, oh, by the way, I need to repeat that 60 snaps a game offensively. He's like, it's so hard as a defensive coordinator to ever deal with that kind of a quarterback. It will drive you insane because they always make the right decision.
Right.
That to me is like, if that's what Hurts is doing.
That's exactly what I was hearing.
Way more impressive than how many deep balls did he throw? Or, you know, yeah, that's fantastic. The quick versus fast, as you're saying it, I remember years ago, I wish I could remember the player that I had talked to, but a player once said to me, fast is gas pedal, quick is steering and brake. I was like, oh yeah, that kind of, you know, makes sense. He's like, yeah, obviously there's gas in quickness too. He said, but it's steering and brake can make you a much quicker player and harder to deal with than, you know, pressing the gas pedal and just running by guys. So I love that. I love that question, by the way. That's a great question for Sirianni. Good job on getting lunch as well. That's always the great lock-in is nailing people down.
You're really tempting me to mention what I mentioned to you guys last week about lunch with Sirianni. The man eats goldfish in his salad.
Oh, that's right.
He tried to convince me that goldfish belong in applesauce.
No. That's just ridiculous. You and I and C-Mac texted about this. And as I said to you, what grown man is eating applesauce?
I told you because he has kids who are like 8, 5, and 3.
And I gave him the mulligan.
The eating of applesauce. But don't put the goldfish in it. He's like, it's sweet and salty. No, sir. No.
I gave him the mulligan when you said he's got kids. And I'm like, yeah, that's right. All right, let's get out of here. I was going to throw Titans in there. I'll tell you what, I'll give you Titans in 60 seconds, okay? Because I think it's worth it, and I'm a little worried for gamblers, by the way. Titans in 60 seconds. I think the offense, when I went out there, it looked more dynamic, under Tim Kelly than maybe what we had saw in last previous stops. I think the offensive line is going to make or break that offense. But I actually thought when I looked at the offense, the pieces, Tajay Spears, some of the plays that they were running, surprisingly in front of fans too, because there's some things running where I'm like, these are like real plays you probably don't want to showcase in front of your fans. It looks like it could be a better offense. The defense, top to bottom, when I looked at it, maybe some depth on at the inside linebacker position, but top to bottom, the defense has a lot of really good starters, and it's a better team than I thought. Now, it can be completely destroyed by the offensive line. We'll see, but everyone in this division has their money on Jacksonville, right? Everyone's all Jacksonville, easiest money, go to Vegas, throw 50 grand on Jacksonville. I'm a little more worried after I went out and I watched the Titans, and I thought this is a better team than I thought. And I don't think if the offensive line plays well, 10-7 is like necessarily out of the realm of possibility, surprising some teams. Now, if the offensive line is bad, and that is possible, it would be bad, 7-10 is just as possible ultimately for this team. But I raised an eyebrow standing there watching them going, oh, maybe I was a little wrong about this just being a total rebuild year. Levis and Malik Willis, by the way, at quarterback, it's going to be interesting to watch those two duke it out for the backup slot. And I think will ultimately be two guys that are going to go toe-to-toe for the starting position next year in that organization. So,
okay, so my last question for you on that betting note is, what's your over-under for DeAndre Hopkins this year, both in terms of yardage and touchdowns?
If Tannehill is healthy the entire season, I could see him catching 90-plus balls this year. I think, though, to me, still a possession-y type receiver. So 90 balls, 1,000 yards, you know, 1,000 to 1,100 yards, you know, this season. Touchdowns of, I don't know, six to nine, you know, somewhere in that range. Because they're going to, the packages particularly that they were using, by the way, that were interesting were red zone packages. And they were involving different things with running back looks and the backfield. And I wouldn't just assume it's like, hey, we have Hopkins, we have Treylon Burks, two guys that, you know, big prototypical types in the red zone. We're going to throw it to these. And by the way, Chig Okonkwo is, I got out there, I'm like, man, 85, like I had to go to the sheet. I'm like, 85 looks like he could be a beast. Another guy big time in the red zone. So I think the touchdowns could be divided up a little bit more based on kind of what they bring into the red zone in terms of just size, speed, skill. I'm really, really interesting to see how this unfolds in this division, because I thought I would have told you slam dunk Jaguars.
Jaguars, right.
Absolutely wins this division. Absolutely the money. And then when I went in, I'm like, man, if this offensive line's okay, this might get hairy for all these bettors on the Jaguars. So,
right. I feel like we had, and this is before DeAndre Hopkins signed, I feel like we had a conversation on this podcast of like, we always try and like give Mike Vrabel the same way we give Mike Tomlin an extra couple wins in our predictions, right, because of what they're right able to do with their team. And there was this conversation of like, does he actually have the talent to do what he's capable of doing? Maybe he does. Also, like, Tannehill's still a good quarterback. Like,
yeah.
And their defense has been good in recent years. So, yeah.
I think probably my most surprising stop, because I expected, I don't know why in my mind, I was just like, come on, this is kind of a rebuild. And then when I got in there, I'm like, maybe I'm wrong about this. So, all right, we'll be back next week. We might fudge a little bit on the day. We're kind of trying to nail some things down here. But as always, we will definitely be back next week. You can get me on Twitter at Charles Robinson. You can get Jory at Jory Epstein. You can get Stone Rochelle, our ace producer, at SJ Rochelle. And as always, help us keep Trez Paler's legacy alive. Check out BreakingTee.com/Trez for the All Juice Tee or hoodie. Remember, that's capital T in BreakingTee.com. Remember, proceeds go to support the Trez A. Paler Scholarship at Howard University. You can contribute to that directly as well as the scholarship in his name at Mizzou if you check out our podcast description. Remember, it's fantasy football season. Check out the Yahoo Fantasy Football Show with our guy Matt Harmon to get ready for your draft season. You only got a couple weeks left here, so tune in. And if you could, please leave us a 5-star review. Tell a friend. We will see you next week. Peace.